The title of the book, Reclaimed. And the author is Ray Cook. And Ray joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. And this interview is brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Ray.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for having me.
This is your true story. You're very, very candid in it. It's about a gay Mormon boy living a double life. And he discovers his personal power and reclaims his identity. So this is a long journey, isn't it?
It sure has been, but very worthwhile.
You're in a good place now. What I'm reading about, you found your self-worth and you found happiness. You've discovered it's a choice. Take us back. When did you know that you had these tendencies, these gay feelings?
So I was probably around the age of 5. Of course, at age 5, you don't know much, but I knew that I was different, and I didn't know what that meant or how to, like, put it into words. But, you know, just my school friends or my neighbor friends, they would have, like, these little girlfriends or boyfriends, and I didn't get it. But I knew I was different, and I would play house with my male neighbor friends, and I just always liked the company of boys. And then as I grew up, I just liked the company of older men, and I've always had close friends with females, and I can relate to them and bond, and we have an emotional connection. But as far as I didn't find out until later in my teen years, when my puberty kicked in and hormones, and that I was sexually attracted to males, and started having not just infatuation feelings, but falling in love feelings, and that's when I could finally pinpoint and say, it was quite a revelation to myself to actually say to myself, I'm gay. And I remember doing that. I was watching a TV show with my mom, and I kind of just said it under my breath. I think we were watching Oprah and about the topic, and it was so terrifying yet liberating. And I remember just kind of like whispering it into the pillow. And anyway.
Right. And did your parents know? Did you keep this a secret all those years?
I did. You know, later as an adult, I asked my parents if they knew or had an inkling, and they said they didn't, and they were very surprised and shocked. So I guess I did a good job of playing the role. But I wasn't forced out until I was in college, and all along I think I overcompensated because I knew I was living a double life, and so I made sure that the facade was perfect. I was the perfect Mormon boy. I knew what I needed to know. I did what I needed to do. Straight A student in athletics, and I was just I did not want to be found out, and I guess I succeeded.
And you went on a mission for the Mormon Church.
I did. I went to Germany. My initial plan was just to escape. As soon as I got there, I was going to ditch everything and start a new life as an expatriate. And I guess it was kind of my last chance to really know for myself that religion wasn't for me. I already pretty much knew, but it was like my last ditch attempt. And on my mission, that's when I really found out for myself spiritually that you know, with my higher power, I was okay, and I didn't need to fight it or disprove it. And I also came to terms with it was time for me to be honest and the power of integrity. And I finally came clean, which got me sent home from my mission. And awaiting me was my an invitation to my church court for excommunication.
So before you got home, your parents knew?
Yes. So I got kicked out of college, and I tried to just pick up the pieces from there for a year. But I went back to the same college. Long story short, I was a competitive collegiate cheerleader, and I was the main tumbler, and they were going to compete at nationals. And I got a call from my coach, And so I went back knowing that I was going to lie through all my interviews and just kind of play their game, because I really wanted to compete. That was taken away from me the last year when I got expelled after I confessed who I was and what I was doing. And so my parents knew, and then so I went back for that year, competed, and then I decided to try this whole mission thing because it's kind of like a rite of passage. As a Mormon male, you're pretty much expected to go on a mission, and it's kind of fun to see where people get called, you know, which country, if they're going to learn a foreign language. And so I was curious as well, and I secretly filled out my papers. It's kind of like an application process, and I didn't let my family know that I was doing this because my plan was I wouldn't consider going unless it was to Germany. I had been there before, and I have a passion for the language, et cetera, but I was just going to call it off. But it was to Germany, the exact place that I'd been to before, and so I got excited and decided to go, and like I said earlier, I was going to use it as my escape plan, and life had better plans for me, I guess.
So when you left on your mission to Germany, everything in your parents' eyes, the church leaders' eyes, all your friends, everything was on track. You were fulfilling your dream.
Yeah, I mean, as far as they were concerned, and what they knew, and what was like on the books and the list of check boxes, I was good to go. I had a worthy temple recommend, which is basically a get in your like a membership card to get into the temple, and I was covering up a lot of many years of just lies and secrets and a double life, and that came to a head when I decided that I wanted to be have some self-respect and just be proud of who I was. And I found out that, you know, as much as I wanted self-esteem, I couldn't develop that by continuing to lie and betray who I really was.
Yeah, you couldn't live a lie and really be yourself, obviously.
No,
you couldn't do that. And how long were you on your mission before you told, I guess, your mission leader?
Yeah, so I was out about 10 months.
Okay. So what was his reaction?
He was very loving. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. We're still friends, and we just had a correspondence recently. And he wanted me to stay. I wanted to stay as well because I was in the service of other people. I had personally decided not to proselytize, not to preach anything out of my mouth, because I didn't want to be a hypocrite. So I kind of did all the other things that I could do and still keep my self-integrity. And he wanted me to stay, but the powers that be in Salt Lake said that I needed to come home. And so I had an exit interview with him, and I remember one of the most profound things to come from him as my mission president, you know, a high church leader, was he just wanted me to be happy. And he said he hoped that I found a man that I could love and treated me well, and I was just blown away by that. That was very novel to me, and very profound.
So this journey of yours, where are you at right now? I mean, I guess before you tell us where you're at right now, what were some of your more challenging things to deal with after you decided to be honest with yourself?
So the fallout from my family, from my community, friends. Growing up Mormon, even though I was entrenched in it and I was a missionary, the subject of excommunication is quite taboo. And really all they talk about is, you know, after someone's excommunicated, that, you know, they lose the Holy Spirit and they're kind of doomed for this life and eternity. And there's really no guide map of, you know, what to do with your life after excommunication. It's kind of like being shunned and like not belong, like not having anywhere to go. And so I had to figure that out pretty much on my own. My parents, I felt for them, and I was it was emotional for me to see them be so heartbroken, because I've always had a good relationship with my parents, and you know, they're whole belief system, as me being excommunicated, they would lose me for eternity. So that was pretty big for them. But just the fallout for my family, you know, it's a big stigma in the Mormon community. You know, a lot of gossip and judgment, and it's one of those big taboos. So I was pretty much on my own, needing support, not knowing what kind of support that was, but just wanting, I needed my family and friends to be there for me and love me and say that everything's going to be okay and we love you anyway and you're going to be all right. My family at the time only knew how to, they loved me the best they could, and I don't blame them, but their way of loving me was trying to get me to come back into the church, get rebaptized, and they weren't getting the fact that who I really was, and not taking that into serious account. So I dealt with that fallout, and then just kind of finding out who I was, like what I really believed in, not having the middleman, and what that meant for my life. Was I okay taking the risk of estrangement from my family and friends and community? And like, I had to forge a new identity, and who was I, and what kind of life I was going to lead. And but most importantly, I think the hardest thing for me is I had come from a place of really I hadn't developed any sense of self-worth, because I had always got that externally from, you know, when I was good in the church, from praise and validation from my leaders and my family, and like being the poster child. And shortly after, well, in my double life, when I was experimenting sexually, I got validation just through sex, like, and that made me feel wanted and important. And even though it made me feel shameful and guilty at the same time, so I had to start from scratch and figure this all out, which was pretty daunting and devastating.
You say you've gotten your happy back. So how did that happen?
Oh, my goodness. A lot of time and patience and good people in my life. You know, some friends are still in my life now who went through that whole process with me back through the excommunication. And just a lot of nice people willing to listen and just hear me out and not try to tell me what to do or what I what they think I should do, but just give me a shoulder to cry on and an ear to hear me out and kind of figure things out. I also therapy. I owe a lot of credit to my therapist. He got me to see to really appreciate my own resilience and how I use coping mechanisms and how strong I really was when I didn't think I was, and to get me to recognize that in myself, and also to understand why I was doing things. I was doing self-destructive behaviors even though I knew better, but I didn't know why I was drawn to that. And I found out, you know, through the process of therapy, it was, you know, I had a lot of unresolved issues of self-esteem and self-worth and unfinished business with my family, and coming to terms with just being okay with who I am, and a lot of forgiveness. I had to forgive myself first, but then just not blame anyone else like I was used to, and just take a different path of you know, what's, I learned the lessons in the past, and I have the power now to create the life that's on my own terms, a self-approved and self-loving life. And so it's been a process, and I owe credit to a lot of wonderful, loving people along the way who were gentle with me.
As we already said, this story is true. It is even graphic at times. You've gone down that road, I guess, for a reason.
So I took out a lot of graphic stories because I didn't want it to be just kind of entertainment smut, as I think I wrote somewhere. But the things that I did keep in the story, they're there for a reason, because I wanted to give the reader a sense of where I came from, as far as my upbringing and what was instilled religiously, but then also the extremes that I went to, because I think when I betrayed myself, self-betrayal made me do a lot of extreme behaviors, because it was like a cry for help, and I wanted to, and in those extreme behaviors that I depict in the book, I also learned a lot about myself and about other people, and I wanted the reader to know that, you know, you can go from these extremes and still make it out on the other end intact, happy, you know, with a good story, but knowing that, you know, you can survive and you are resilient and you are powerful, and your past doesn't define you. It certainly doesn't define me today. It's helped me become who I am, but so I kept the stories in there for a reason that goes along with a theme, and I guess a little shock value is entertaining, so why not, but more to it than that.
Well, you have found yourself, you're at peace with that, and you're moving on with your life. We've been listening to Ray Cook, the author of his book, Reclaimed. Ray, tell us the best way to get your book.
Probably the most convenient way is Amazon. It's available in hardcover, paperback, and also ebook, Barnes & Noble. You can order it through BalboaPress.com or my website, rclmd.com.
Thank you so much, Ray, for joining us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you to the listeners.
And this interview has been brought to you by Balboa Press.